Chapter 1 of Green Grey Homestead by Steele Rudd. This legamous recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Anna Simon. 2OBS. Recalling spent hours that were flooded with gladness, gladness that sparkled in quip and in quest, bringing back thoughts of bluest blue mountains, memories of shade trees when winds in their boughs crooned songs that were old, crooned songs that were new, crooned songs to the future, the songs that came true. S. R. Chapter 1. You'll be single when the idea of taking up a homestead first gets you, sober and steady going, too. You'll be sick of knocking round, working for wages which you don't always collect. You'll be longing to settle down on a place of your own, to be your own boss and have a little wife and nice kids. So you'll decide one night, when in bed feeling lonely, to take the plunge and chance the ducks. When you tell your friends, there won't be many of them, they'll be amused at first and will figure you're contemplating matrimony, getting the cage ready to put the bird in. They'll be old homesteaders themselves, and their wives, who'll be grandmothers, will stir your vanity by approving of your intentions and telling you you're wise for not doing what their husbands did, and they'll screw faces at the old man squatting there at the fire, gazing into the flame as if waiting for a shower of money to come flying out of it. "Caught their birds before they had the cage to put them in," they'll upbraid, "and hawked us round the country with them, looking for work, instead of having houses ready for us to live in." "There'll be nothing like that about me," you'll grin. And those old women will be working all the time they're talking, slashing into basins of cream with spoons and licking their fingers as the butter comes. So, by and by, you'll begin to save your wages to pay the first instalments on the homestead and make the start. Old Silas King, the big gun of the district, who'll have scraped areas of land together during his 60-odd years, and is a J.P., and a churchman, will have advised you when working for him to get a homestead and take a wife to help you do something big in the world.
"Pshaw," he had scoffed. "A strong, healthy young man like you, Dick Gow, shouldn't be afraid to tackle a homestead. Tut, tut, get hold of a block, no matter how small," he urged, "whether you have the money or not. Get it before the land is all gone, and think about paying it off after. Look at me. When I selected my first block, I hadn't sixpence left to work it with. The lands office took it all. But I stuck it, and by attending church regularly I've come through. And look at me now."
So in a year or two you'll hear of a block of good land open for homestead selection, and you'll find out all about it from the storekeeper, or someone who reads the newspaper. You'll be told to keep it quiet, and not let on to a soul that you're going in for it. Then you'll withdraw your savings from the bank, and into the lands office you'll go with your application. There'll be anxious moments for you after that, and for a lot of others, too. Though you'll hope it will be someone worse off than yourself who'll draw the block if you don't draw it, you'll be praying hard all the same that all the applications will be informal, except your own. But your luck'll be in. Your bread will be cast on the water, for in time you'll get a government letter telling you you've drawn Homestead Block Number 0000, situate in the parish of Maloney, County Joe, containing 160 acres, more or less. Laws, how you'll shake when you read it, as if it was a summons. But when you finish the last word, you'll smile and poke your chest out and feel taller. When the first Sunday comes round, you'll mount your horse and off out to inspect your property. You'll ride all over it, filled with the proud spirit of ownership. Every inch of it and everything on it will be yours. The growing timber, the logs and firewood lying about, hundreds of fencing posts that some poor coves split and had to abandon. The old sheepyard and shepherd's hut that were erected by someone who went insolvent. Even the wild flowers and darned stones will be yours. How you'll admire it all! And while your horse will be snatching at the grass as if he knew it was yours, and wanted to sample it and give opinion on its quality, you'll remain in the saddle, gazing, and trying to calculate its total worth. There'll be a couple of hills to take your fancy as sites for houses and yards, but you won't know which to decide on. It'll be a wonderful lookout, and that homestead'll seem just a big Christmas tree to you, hanging with prizes. Then you'll start wondering what would be a good name for it. Being Australian, you'll think of Wongongara and Turmurimi and Yalcalba and other fancy Abbo names. Perhaps you'll be in a joking mood and think of calling it St. Elmo Square or the Boulevard or Imperial Paradise. Then you'll laugh and ride on a bit further. You'll strike up along Red Rock Gully to see the water in the spring. It'll be because of the water that you and everyone applied for the block, and it will be the only waterhole for miles around that was never known to go dry in a drought. At least, that will be what you've heard from the old hands who used to camp near it when they were kangaroo shooting for a living. Following a beaten track, you'll switch back that gully till you come to a grassy flat in a hollow of the range. The flat will be bare as bark and sprinkled over with cow dung that's mostly out of season, and bleached bones and horns. The hollow will be a camping ground for all beasts that come to water there. And how your eyes will sparkle and your heart beat fast when you see the water shining under a high clay wall, with wavelets no bigger than a gum leaf rippling to the wind. It will be a spectacle. You'll just miss colliding with a couple of old cows in your hurry to get to that waterhole to look down into it. And the longer you look into it, the deeper it will seem to be. The deepest part, though, won't be more than a couple of feet, according to the amount of mud and bones that will be in it. But it will be 12 feet wide and more, and the water will be very clear, that is, if the cattle haven't been puddling in it. Though old yellow bones will protrude round the edges, you won't see them. You'll only have eyes for the beauty and the gold in it. After a while, you'll see your horse and yourself reflected in it. That homestead will grow on you as a wonderful discovery, and you'll look down the gully and up at the rock sides, feeling like Captain Cook when he found Australia. There'll be green grass 3 feet long, hanging down, draping the cliff, and the bones lying underneath on the rock bottom will give tragic evidence of what became of animals that were tempted to reach down for it. And the bees coming to the water and flying off at every angle will tell of the honey on your homestead. So you'll decide to stop coves from trespassing in search of bees' nests by writing a public notice to them soon as you get home. There'll be gums and wattle and wild apple trees hanging over that spring too, all rich in blossom. The smell of them will be everywhere, and the gathering of birds hopping about the limbs and on the rocks, greeting you as if they had had word of your coming, will make you feel you created the homestead yourself and everything on it. But while standing there in thought, your horse will be fidgeting for a drink. He isn't concerned about birds and bees or with making a fortune. So you'll hop off his back, give him the reins, and let him help himself. While he's inching cautiously into the water, stretching his neck, snorting at the bees to blow them out of reach of his nose, you'll remove your hat and get down to it on the flat of your stomach yourself. Lovely and cool it'll be, and in the middle of your thirst you'll lift your head to take breath and smack your lips as if it was a brewery you'd come into. You'll glance up to see how the horse is enjoying it, and will notice he's taking it in like a pump. His tail and ears will work as if there were handles, and you'll see the water hurling up along his neck as if there was an elevator in them. You'll grin at the hurry he's in, too, then start into it again yourself, keeping time with the horse. While you'll be sucking it up, there'll be a string of quiet cattle sauntering along a track skimming the edge of the clay cliff way above you, 100 feet or more. Like cattle often do, they'll get shoving one another at the most dangerous angles, till one slips a cloven hoof over the edge and disturbs 100 weight of loose cliff that's been on the balance for many a year. Then it will leap out and come whistling down, touching nothing but air till it squashes the water, right where you and your horse are drinking, and between your heads. Laws, you won't know what happened. But when you find your feet, and wipe the mud out of your eyes and the water from your hair, and look round, there won't be a living thing near. Your horse will be turning round about 80 yards away, holding his head high, his tail up in line, the bridle reins hanging. He'll be all splashed, too, and looking scared and indignant. At all the old cows that were lying about when you came up, as if they had finished with the world and were only waiting for a pass to the next, will be on their feet staring at you, taking you for an evil spirit, and ready to stampede. The silvery-throated birds, too, will scent something amiss, for there won't be a sound coming from them. And, way up above, the brutes that made all the trouble will be staring innocently down in line at you. Even a black goanna, scooting round a tree butt, will keep his beady eye on you till he climbs high enough to feel safe. Every living thing round that waterhole, and above, and below it, will regard you as a disturbing element. When you look on the water again, which will have changed colour, there will be a jagged corner of that hundredweight of cliff poking over its surface, and a couple of dragonflies will be holding a love-meeting on it. A shudder will creep down your back and run up it again, and you'll ask yourself, "What would I have done if that damn rock had landed on my head?" Then you'll move off, thankful, and sneaking round your horse, and keeping wide so as not to startle him. The dull-brained, quizzing old cows will move curiously after you, making sure you're a spook. And not till you're on the horse again, and looking yourself, will they believe it is you. But when you roar at them, waking the gorge with echoes, they'll just lower their heads, close their eyes again, and look satisfied. And the birds will all start chirping as if it had just come daylight. Then you'll round up those cattle, waving your hat at them for a whip, to see what their brands and earmarks are. Gee, they all belong to old Silas King, every hoof of them, and the brute's eating your grass and drinking your good water. He's had the use of your homestead without paying rent for it for half a lifetime. And his boundary fence, in which is an opening 4 panels wide for the cattle to go in and out, will only be a few hundred yards off. To take some of your advice is all right, you'll reason, but that don't mean I'm going to let you have the use of my property for nothing, Mr. King. So you'll rush them away, shouting at them, hustling them through the opening back into his paddock. Then you'll dismount to hang your horse up while you mend the fence, so that they won't return to commit further trespass. And when you're riding off, feeling you've done good work, those cattle will be standing watching, indignant-looking, and you'll wish you had a good dog to put on their heels and send them stampeding to Halifax. Crossing a ridge covered with broom-brush, pebbles and flintstones, from where you'll get a close view of the sunlit plains beyond, bronze-winged pigeons and quail will fly up, and you'll recollect how Mrs. Fitzpatrick said that country where there are plenty of pigeons is best for raising turkeys. And all in a moment you'll see yourself growing great flaming gobblers by the hundred, at a time when no one has any, and getting top price for them in the market. And as you move on over the ridge, there'll be so many big goannas creeping about, dragging their long tails after them, that you'll figure another couple of quid a week revenue from the oil that's inside them. Leaning here and there against trees will be snares set to catch possums by someone. You'll stare hard at them. The darn cheek! Setting snares on a bloke's land to catch his possums with! You'll say, "None of that any longer!" And you'll kick those snares over, taking away the copper wire for your own use. Before you've ridden all over it, the value of your homestead will go up and up till it's worth 20 quid an acre. You'll see the house and barn and yards built. The house will have a veranda all round, painted chocolate, the barn and stable roofed with iron. A windmill will be twirling beside them, and the yards full of cows walking in and out of the bales, and a big roan bull shaking his head, expostulating and looking angrily through the rails because he's not allowed in to have all his own way. The world will move rapidly with you now, and after another look round you'll head for home again. Your home will be at Caledonia, old Bob Sankey's farm, where you worked for 5 years. And of course it will be Sunday. You wouldn't be away from Caledonia if it wasn't. You'll catch up to old Silence King himself on the way. He'll be driving home from church in his new sulky. He always drives by himself on Sunday. His thoughts don't get crowded in it, and it gives him room for pious reflection. But he'll have a hymn-book beside him on the seat for company. And as you come up, proud that you know him to speak to, and bursting to tell him the good news, you'll feel like a sinner breaking the Sabbath. "Getting back from church, Mr. King," you'll call out humbly across the wheel as you come up springing in the saddle.
"Yes, yes,"
he'll answer, surprised, and clutching the reins tight.
"And it's where everyone should be getting back from."
Though you know old Silas would make a low pass in a test for keeping the commandments, you'll be shy of starting an argument, so you'll be tactful and tell him you acted on his advice and applied for a homestead block for yourself and got it.
"A homestead? Where?"
he'll ask, looking hard at you.
Not knowing that he wanted that block of land for years because of water on it, or that he'd moved members of Parliament and government officials and friends to have it thrown open for selection on the quiet, and had put in a dozen dummy applications for it, you'll innocently tell him all, and ask his opinion of it.
"What? Spring Gully?" he'll snarl. "That country is no good for you. 'Twouldn't feed a bandicoot."
You'll think him a curious old man, and put it down to liver. Then he'll look closer at you, and talk of the costly improvements you'll have to make, and that you'll be called upon to pay him half the cost of a boundary fence he put up 20 years ago, at the rate of £50 a mile. You won't have anything to say after that, and when leaving him at the crossroads you'll hardly hear him chuckling, "You were a fool to go in for it, a damn young fool." But that night in bed, when you put out the light, you'll see your homestead gleaming out there under the range, with all its grass and timber, and animals and birds, and you'll see it in the years ahead with a railway to it, a procession of farmhands, of plough teams and wagons at work, a dairy herd in full swing, buyers of wheat coming and going, agents offering you £40 an acre, walk in, walk out, the local banker calling and lifting his hat to you, and you'll laugh beneath the blankets, and reckon old Silas King can go and hang himself. End of chapter 1.